Today on our Tech for Business podcast, we're joined by Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity, and Andrew, our Security Engineer. We're talking DMARC today, so here's the disclaimer. We're going to try to be high level, but with this topic, there's kind of no way to not be technical and have a very technical conversation. So we'll do our best to explain all of the pieces, but, you know, I'll link our previous podcast that where we talked about email security, but this is going to be a little bit more of a deep dive. Let's start with maybe Nate. I know explaining what it is and giving us that high level is important, but also, can you tell us why we're talking about this today? Why is this topic important for our audience?
Yeah. So let's actually step back a little bit, is communication, right? How do we actually communicate with individuals? So in the past, we would tend to write a lot of letters, right? It's kind of a dying art these days. You would typically have some type of piece of paper, a pen, right? And send that on its way and someone gets it, you know, snail mail 5 days later. Maybe, again, we're going even further back before, you know, widespread of the post office, and someone had to hop on a horse and deliver it months later, right? As, hey, by the way,
how old are you, Nate? Jeez.
I remember history, but I rarely write letters these days. Yes. But with that though, right, is if you wanted to send it and you didn't want anyone just casually reading it, typically what you did is you take your piece of paper that's in front of you and you put it into an envelope, you lick the stamp or peel the strip or whatever, right, and then write your name, who it's going to. If you feel creative and fancy, you stick a little wax stamp on it. But every letter comes with the basics, right? You have dear so-and-so on the letter body. You write out the email. You always sign it with your name at the end. You fold that up, stick it in the envelope. You have the name and address that you're sending it from in the middle, who it's going to. And then there's the post stamp that goes on the top right, right? Email is similar, right? We didn't reinvent the wheel of how to communicate. We just made it into an electronic form. So in email, we still have things like the envelope and the message body. And then we have other components that we'll get to in a little bit, talking about the different mechanisms to validate who, you know, sent the message and is it intended for the person it's going to. But the importance of this is that we're talking about DMARC because there is so much spam out on the internet, and they are always trying to elicit some type of reaction, you know. And so there's other podcasts we've done in the past that talk a little bit more about the psychology of how to, you know, phish you and everything like that. But what they're trying to do is they're either trying to impersonate someone to make it look like it's coming from someone else, and then what we're trying to do is combat that today. And that's kind of where DMARC starts to come into play. So we are putting these security mechanisms in play to validate that the communication between individuals is legitimate and it's intended for the proper audience.
So that's kind of a high level overview. I know that there are kind of different components, and we've got a little bit of like an alphabet soup about how it all works. I don't know if Andrew, maybe as our, you know, technical security engineer here, if you want to go into a little detail about that and how it kind of works.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's absolutely right, as it is an alphabet soup of analogies and, you know, characters and things like that. I will keep it at the alphabet soup. I won't dive into the technical name for them to keep it high level. But using Nate's analogy with the letter, right? You have your envelope, you have the to, the from, with the stamp, you have your signature on the inside, you sealed it by licking it or, you know, putting a wax stamp on it. Those things are what we are using to protect the communication. There's three steps, three things you can do to protect the mail validity. SPF is the first step. DKIM is the second step. And then DMARC is that third step. So starting back at SPF, the analogy for that would be like the stamp on the envelope, right? You stamp the letter, you give it to the post office. The post office actually voids the stamp, so you can't reuse it, but they void it before sending it off to John Doe. John Doe can then look at that stamp and say, yes, that came from the Minneapolis post office. I know that Ariel always sends me letters from the Minneapolis post office. I will trust that. That's how SPF's working. There's a list of known senders, trusted senders that say they send mail on Ariel's behalf. So, you know, maybe there's a marketing email that Ariel sent from Woodbury. That gets sent off to John Doe. John Doe can see, yep, that came from Woodbury. Ariel sends me letters from Woodbury all the time. Second step, DKIM. Using the signature that Nate was talking about, inside the letter, you signed your signature. Well, what DKIM is doing is Ariel has talked to a notary, has given her signature to that notary and verified with an ID and confirmed it's her signature. And then that notary puts it out on like a public website, you know, a phone book, whatever, something that John Doe has access to. Ariel sends that letter to John Doe. John Doe can look at that signature in the letter and compare it to the signature that has been confirmed it's from Ariel's. So knowing that they match, reasonable to believe that it's from Ariel, right? It's very hard to, technically speaking, you can't fake that signature. It just wouldn't work. But analogy-wise, it's hard to copy a signature exactly. DMARC. DMARC is that third step. What DMARC is doing is it's putting the responsibility for checking for SPF or DKIM validation on the post office. So Ariel, she stamps her letter, she signs her letter, she sends it off to John Doe. John Doe's post office will look at that and say, yeah, that came from Minneapolis. And yeah, that has her signature. I will deliver it to John Doe. You know, Vladimir in Russia won't have the correct stamp, won't have the correct signature. And so when it gets to John Doe's post office, the post office will take actions based off of what the DMARC policy says. And there's a couple components with kind of a couple instructions with how DMARC works. And we'll talk about that here a little bit later. But quickly, there's three steps. None says, hey, deliver it. Just tell me your reports. Quarantine, where the post office could throw it in the trash or, you know, write on the letter potential junk mail and still deliver it to John Doe. And then reject, where they would throw it in the trash or send it back to Vladimir. So kind of in a nutshell, using the analogies, that would be how I would explain SPF, DKIM, and DMARC.
I love how you go pick on Vladimir in Russia. I'm pretty sure he can find a legitimate post stamp if he needs.
Yeah, I'm sure. But hey, you can't fake Ariel's signature. That one's unique. Yeah,
can't fake her signature. So yeah, the those are kind of the components that get tied into to DMARC and everything. And I'm gonna stand a little bit on my soapbox a little bit, just in case there are other insurance companies that are listening to this. One of the common insurance questions that you'll see on your insurance renewals is, have you implemented things like SPF to combat spoofing? SPF does nothing to combat spoofing, right? It is only a list of servers that are authorized to send mail on your behalf. What the recipient of that email does with it is up to them. You could have a message that is signed or that is listed as your server, or Mr. Vladimir in Russia could send one, and it could fail. And if the person receiving that email doesn't check that or enforce it, it does nothing. So insurance companies talk about DMARC, not SPF. So if possible. So there's my little soapbox, just to help try and change the industry, get better aligned with how the technical mechanisms actually work. So with that though, maybe we can talk about some of the challenges of actually implementing DMARC. So DMARC, again, it's a complicated thing, right, for the most part, right? I think maybe I'll start with the challenges culturally or, you know, emotionally when it comes to emails. is people are very protective about the delivery of their emails. They do not want their messages moving to junk, moving to spam, moving to the deleted mailbox. So whenever you are potentially impacting the flow of that data, they are very protective, which I should kind of state is DMARC is an outbound control, right? It's not doing anything for inbound emails. So we're not talking about spam filtering today. We're not talking about there's a more technical concept that, you know, maybe we can touch on at a later date called MTI-STS. That's about kind of protecting man-in-the-middle internal attacks. It's all outbound. So that's kind of where getting to the culture and everything and just the emotional reaction to a message move to junk is very important, and why we'll talk about some of the considerations when putting DMARC into play. But one of the big challenges is knowing what's sending mail on your behalf. Oftentimes people don't know everything that's sending mail on their behalf. I'll just go pick on our marketing team. They love using new tools. Yep. They love using new tools and saying, we'll just send this out as CIT. Unless they tell us moving forward, those messages will all get rejected. Sure, I think you had something that you wanted to say as well.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. And I wasn't going to pick on Ariel and our marketing team. I was just going to say marketing teams going rogue, for an example, because they love sending mass mail, because that's their job. It's just to get that business, get those people talking. You know, a common one is some person signs up for a service and starts sending mass mail. Well, if you have DMARC implemented correctly, IT will have that control in place to prevent that from successfully delivering. Now, it's a legitimate from a, you know, entity that you work with, but same thing can apply for a hacker or somebody trying to spam or spoof your domain.
If you can't tell, building bridges between departments is going to be a big thing. We love our marketing team. Hopefully we treat them well enough that they want to keep working with us, but here we are joking with each other, so I hope that's at least an indication of we've built those bridges. They know to collaborate with us, and we'll collaborate with them. So that's a big one, is knowing all the emails and like what's sending mail on your behalf. And then the other one is going to be the monitoring of it. So, you know, as I had mentioned that when we're sending out mail, we're trying to now restrict it a little bit to say if it's not legitimate or not properly authorized, you know, either move it to junk, delete it altogether. How do you know what the impact's going to be, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where we can start talking about a little bit of the, you know, the mechanisms for that as well. There are tools out there. So at CIT, we use a solution called Easy DMARC. It's a great partner of ours. So whenever you send mail out, the recipient servers, so if I send a message to you, your email server sends it back and says, hey, by the way, here's where it originated from, you know, did it pass the SPF DKIM and DMARC? And then if so, if it's configured to do so, it'll send a report back to my email server or the email address that I've associated with, and then it sucks that data in. And then I can do with it whatever I please. Those reports are technical. You know, they come in as XML files, if anyone's familiar with that. And you'll receive thousands and thousands and thousands of them. So how do you make sense of that data? You use a reporting engine to correlate that, build the graphs, give you the ability to search the data between those thousands of emails. That's one of the things that we have seen customers do kind of poorly in the past, is they just send it to some random mailbox and it's just a dumping ground of reports. So
using the post office analogy from before to also simplify what Nate just said a little bit, it's like the post office is giving you a daily report delivered to your house that you can look at. Here are all of the locations where, or emails, or sorry, I should say letters, letters that I delivered around the world. And that looked like that came from you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm, you know, I'm going a little rogue here because what comes to mind for me is, and we can talk about implementation and what that looks like, but once it is implemented, you know, how much are you guys watching that? And do you have just a guy sitting there reading reports every day? Or what does the lift on the back end sort of look like once you have it all implemented? Yeah. And then we can kind of go back and talk about implementation.
Yeah, if I may jump in. There's kind of two methods of thought. Is once it's set up, it is kind of a set it and forget it unless there is an issue. Or you can daily, weekly, monthly review them. The nice thing about using a third-party data aggregate like EasyDMARC is that I can look back historically between, you know, October 2nd and October 7th, their, you know, salesperson A got a bounce back. Well, we can look at that mail item and say, yeah, you used this service. All right, let's go talk to this vendor because that's a new vendor that was just put in place. But it is, like I said, a set it and forget it. As long as there's no new third-party services getting set up, you're not changing mail platforms, things like that, you can just let it roll because it's doing its job. And if you notice a problem, you can look back historically. The nice thing is, like I said, though, is having that third-party data aggregate that you can do that very quickly instead of looking through the dumping ground of 1,000 different XML reports that are very difficult and not very human readable.
For sure. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about implementation,
Sorry, I might actually just jump on and give an example of the importance of continual monitoring. I'm going to keep this one quite anonymous, but kind of, you know, putting into practice of what does this actually mean? What's the impact of not monitoring DMARC and the messages that are being rejected? So when you can configure DMARC. Again, you can configure it to just start rejecting and never receive, you know, reports or never monitor it. That's totally, I'm going to say totally fine in quotations if you're just listening to this, because it'll work until it doesn't. And one of the examples is I know that there's a university in the US that was using a third-party vendor to send out student enrollment emails. So as new high school students or, you know, non-traditional students were registering or, you know, applying to the university, whenever they're accepted, an email goes out, says, hey, congrats, you've been accepted to this university. They usually follow up with a paper copy as well. However, in one of these universities' examples, the vendor switched IPs and did not tell the university. So all of a sudden, all these emails started going out. DMARC was configured to reject policies that are not on the authorized list. And so all those welcome emails, you've been accepted to this university, never went out. Paper copies still get delivered, but again, snail mail takes a little bit longer. So when a student doesn't hear back from a university, while another university is quickly sending out those acceptance emails, well, the student's going to go accept a different university and move on and pursue their higher education. That's lost revenue for a university, right? It could be millions of dollars because now you don't collect all that tuition money from that one student every single year. Now, bring that to scale. If an entire service goes down, that'll significantly impact the bottom line. Now, let's kind of take this into, you know, private schools, right? Is if you're doing the same thing, you're doing collaboration with, you know, maybe you have a big gala as a fundraising event. If you're in e-commerce or, you know, anything like that, where you're sending out lots of mail or mailing letters, chances are you probably already run into DMARC because Google and Yahoo kind of forced this on high volume senders back in February. We'll get to the rest of us in a little bit, but if you're sending out all that, again, your services, your mailing letters may not be delivered to the intended people. Maybe they're not buying your product anymore because you don't have things like DMARC implemented. So this is a major shift in 2024 is DMARC is really tightening up at the moment. So,
and add just a bit to that last comment. It's third parties that are enforcing it. DMARC is just a standardization kind of rules, but Microsoft and Google and Yahoo are following those rules now, or making you follow those rules.
Yeah. So I believe, if I remember correctly, it was over 5,000 messages.
Yeah, 5,000 messages a day, I think, is what the, or 10,000, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, if you send over 5,000 messages a day, you are kind of start running into your messages being sent to, you know, the junk folders and everything like that. So now that there's plenty of emails that are going out, or sorry, articles that are going out saying it's time to continue pushing that out to the rest of us. So when Yahoo and Google started enforcing it back in February, we saw a 60% jump in DMARC implementation in the first 2 months. That's, I think, from Dark Reading. We can always link that article. But there was a big jump. But now it's kind of slowed back down. And so they're kind of calling for another push of this coming to keep pushing it. Because if I remember correctly, I think it was only like 14% of companies, of the top companies, have DMARC fully implemented. Here at CIT, Andrew, I think, has implemented 75 different organizations on DMARC this year alone.
Numbers higher. Year, sure. Yeah, 75 this year. I'll agree to that. But I've done probably many more than that over my entire career here at CIT. Yeah.
So if you're looking for the expert, it's Andrew on this call. But anyways, DMARC is still widely unimplemented, and that's why we still see so much spam and everyone's trying to force that. So, which, again, it's election season in a couple days, so I don't care who you vote for, just go vote. But then also just the, there's an article that I just saw last night that said like 75% of all these Senate campaigns aren't using DMARC either. So it, maybe if you're a U.S. senator, come listen to our podcast. So.
Yeah. I had a quick question, you know, as you're talking about who's sort of implementing this, and you mentioned, you know, cyber insurance and at least the SPF being part of that. I mean, is this not a part of compliance requirements? And, well, I guess that's my first question. No. Is it not a part of compliance requirements?
I'm going to say broadly, no.
There's no group of people telling you you have to have SPF DKIM and DMARC. It's Microsoft, Google, and Yahoo rejecting your mail because you do not have those pieces in place. Yeah. And they get enough junk themselves. They are just going to reject it if it doesn't pass the tests.
Yeah,
sure.
I won't get back on my soapbox, but broadly, it's a technical conversation, which is why the technical people are kind of leading the charge.
Yeah.
Again, you'll see it on your insurance, but it's broader into just preventing spoofing.
Insurance's goal and compliance's goal is to prevent the ransomware, prevents the data loss. By implementing a control like this, you are helping prevent that in the first place. But they're primarily concerned about data loss and loss of money or insurance claims and policies.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. One of the things I would like to just touch on, because it's one of the big challenges with implementing DMARC, and I'll do a selfish plug of why you'd want to partner with someone like CIT, you know, not only just for Andrew's experience, but some of the tools that we use on the back end, like Easy DMARC, is I'm going to get briefly technical for a second, and then we'll come back out, is the SPF records. There is a 10 DNS lookup maximum before it gives up, essentially. And so what this looks like is, again, let's say we know that, I'm going to pick a generic name, John Doe or John Smith sent this letter, and you are trying to look at who that, like the home address of this individual. When you go to the white pages, there's going to be 45 different John Smiths in there. Again, you're only allowed to look up 10 of them first before giving up. And so as you're going down the list and you're still not finding them, all of a sudden you don't see it, it breaks, SPF fails, right? And so when DMARC, again, is looking for either SPF or DKIM success, it's just one of those challenges, because we do see vendors that are providing really poor SPF records for you to implement. I'm sure Andrew's going to jump in that in a second. But we do see customers with 23 different SPF lookups. Well, your mail is just inherently broken sometimes by using some of those providers. That's where some of the tools like EasyDMARC, what they do is they call, it's called SPF flattening, which there's some danger when doing that manually, is all of a sudden you just list a bunch of IPs, which there's caveats to this because you can only have a record that's so long. And if you have a lot of mailing services, now you're stuck in a bind, is I can't have more than 10 lookups, but I also can't have it super long. These tools in place, when it's checking the John Smith, it already has the record on the back end of all your servers, and it just provides that one name. And so you only ever are hitting one attempt, essentially. So you're staying well under all those limits. So, sure.
I'd like to chime in on a couple of things that you brought up there. Talking about the vendors with SPF, with the 10 DNS lookups, right? Very recently, actually, there was a client of ours that was using a third party. A third party gave instructions to add this item, add this allowed service to send on their behalf in their SPF record, right? And inside of that, there's another 5, 6, 7 DNS lookups. And the way it works is that you look up one that has 2 or 3. Well, now you have 4 lookups. And then it goes to the next one. Now that one has 6 or 7. And that's counting. Oh, now you're at 12. Well, when you hit that 11th one, no matter where it is, if you say have vendor 1, vendor 2, and then Microsoft, that is your primary mail sending, right? It looks up vendor 1, vendor 2. And now you already hit your 12. Goes to look up Microsoft, that fails that entire thing because it doesn't get to that Microsoft lookup. Now, Nate was talking about SPF flattening and kind of the tools with EasyDMARC. EasyDMARC calls it specifically Easy SPF. What we're doing with Easy SPF to get past that 10 record lookup is we add the list of 100, 200 DNS lookups in EasyDMARC. Or in Easy SPF, I guess. And mail service out on the internet says, hey, CIT-net.com is SendGrid allowed to send as you. And Easy SPF says, yeah, that's an on my allowed list. He's kind of like the bouncer, right? You know, he's checking his list. Yeah, all right. Yep, SendGrid, it's on my list. Yeah, you're allowed to go in. Yeah, you're allowed to deliver. So that's how that's all working as kind of a technical higher level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we won't pick on specific vendor names, but if you're in the banking industry, come contact us for solutions like this, because chances are your core banking companies are having some really bad SPF records.
The one I know you're talking about, I won't say by name, but they are consuming 80% of the 10 lookups. Just purely by them just existing. Oh, and so you get 2 extra. They're eating 80% of your pie.
I like that.
Well, as we kind of close out here, I want to give you guys an opportunity to share anything else we didn't cover, any other technical things. And then sort of if you are a IT admin or cybersecurity professional and you're sitting here saying, oh man, I need to get this set up because our marketing team is crazy. What would be kind of that first step for them?
Yeah.
And then anything else. Say you're
not
alone.
Yeah.
We're here.
So send CIT an email, send the marketing team an email, and they'll get you in contact with us. No, one of the things I guess we didn't dive too deep on and kind of goes into what question you're posing there is kind of where to start. Where I would strongly recommend you start is with that DMARC step. DMARC has those 3 settings, right? None, quarantine, reject. What we want to do first is we want to set it to none, where it says, hey, world, you go ahead and deliver the mail that looks like it comes from me, but send me a report about it. Post office, give me daily reports. Gathering that data is the first step. I have never worked with a client that knows 100% of the mail that is third-party senders that are sending mail on their behalf. Without a doubt, there's always one random vendor app that the person forgot about. So setting that policy to none, where it says, hey, world, give me your reports. Microsoft, Google, Yahoo will send you reports on the daily. You can then figure out what vendors are using your domain. You know, you have Microsoft and Google because you have Office 365 or G Suite. And then you use SendGrid to send out your marketing emails, and then Constant Contact to send your account reset passwords for your line of business app. But no one ever knows all of those. And so gathering that data is that first step that is very important. As you're gathering the data, then you're going to know, hey, my SPF record for this vendor is failing, or this vendor isn't DKIM signing. But it's really gathering the data is that very important first step.
Yeah, and that is really important. Here at CIT, we started locking down our internal, inbound emails as well. And we're catching customers that just have poorly configured SPF records or DKIM, right, for one reason or another. And their email coming into CIT is failing. So we're quarantining their messages. And then we're, as we see those, proactively reaching out and trying to correct them. Because if it failed to us, it's likely failing to your customers as well. And so that's one of the big things that we're working through. So again, how do you know whether or not you've been sending mail out for months that's technically broken? It's the monitoring. So
Definitely. Well, that was very digestible. I feel like I learned a lot on this. So thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Like, subscribe, or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.